wishing all Radio Aryan listeners a happy Christmas and a diversity-free New Year.
You're listening to the Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Traditionalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 28th of December, 2017. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Of course, as it's Thursday, I have with me as my co-host, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. And as you're all aware, on Thursdays, the subject matter is picked by him and he's going to be taking the floor, as it were. And today, I believe we're going to be talking a little bit about perceived Russian aggression and the opposition candidate against Putin. Matt, how are you doing today anyway, before we begin? Did you have a good Christmas?
Well, you know, it's always odd for me because I'm on the old calendar. And what we used to do is my kids, you would have the Santa Christmas on the 25th. And so we would have the 7th as liturgical Christmas. So we get to have, you know, the fun of it, you know, on the one hand. And then on a separate day, you have the real one, with all the liturgical elements that go along with it. It's actually really a great thing. Being on the old calendar is a great benefit in this country.
So you don't actually have Santa on the Orthodox Christmas then. That's a purely Catholic and Protestant tradition, is it?
Well, you know, he's Saint Nicholas. You know, kind of and so when my kids were little, we never had the Santa thing. We just referred to Saint Nicholas, Saint Nick. You know, and of course, he is actually a real being. And so we never had that Santa doesn't exist talk. We never had to have it because it wasn't really relevant. So we just referred to him as St. Nicholas the whole time. And so it really is. So Santa, of course, you know, yeah, there's St. Nicholas or the St. Nicholas. The St. Nicholas Day on the 17th of December is just as big as Christmas itself. So another great reason to be on the old calendar.
You know, just I know this is a bit off topic, but just since we're on the subject of Santa Claus, you know, some people say, oh, it's not right that people lie to their children about Santa. And I thought about it. I thought, well, there's a good reason for this. I mean, basically, it lets children know very gently that sometimes people lie, and it teaches them the ways to spot when somebody is telling them a lie in a very gentle way, so that they know that they've got to pay more. They've got to pay attention to what people are saying to them, and sometimes grown-ups lie to them. Have you ever thought of that before?
Santa, you know, I grew up with Santa, and I hated learning of his non-existence. But he's an archetype. Now, Saint Nicholas is an actual person, but Santa Claus is an archetype of really what a saint would be, even what God would be. So, in that sense, it's not a lie. It's the archetype of what a perfect world would look like. So that's why I have no problem with it. And if you look at it that way, it's not a lie. It's not an actual person.
Yeah, it's a good way of looking at it. It's certain lessons that can be learned from that anyway. All right. Well, today, I mean, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about this perceived Russian aggression over here. We've been told that Russian boats are traveling through the channel and the BBC have tried to make out that it's a big threat. And they had on a previous Russian ambassador who said, well, no, this is quite normal. They're just on their way to the Baltic Sea, and we travel through the Black Sea, and they're quite entitled to travel along through the shipping routes. And it was quite clear that the BBC were just trying to drum up fear and make out that the Russians were the bad guys. And I hear something similar has been put on the news over there. Is that right?
Yeah, CNN ran a video report that stated that Russia is engaged in aggressive military maneuvers. And this is the only time they refer to Trump as President Trump, because they see him as militant against that kind of thing. And so all of a sudden, he's now President Trump. And This happens about every week. Really, you get this threat. The U.S. has surrounded Russia with military bases and aggressive military forces and an offensive posture. There's a huge buildup in Romania and Bulgaria and the Baltics, as well as the Far East. They're the aggressors. Russia doesn't have the desire or the ability to be aggressive towards anybody. The Russian state only came back into existence really in 2003, 2004. So, and I'm telling my listeners right now, the biggest single issue in the world is this obsession of the American ruling class to get involved in a war with Russia. And they are obsessed with it because they want to destroy this thorn in their side, this ideological thorn in their side. I want to note that this buildup never occurred against the USSR, proving that Marxism was never the issue. Nationalism is the issue. The sanctions never existed on the Soviet Union. They certainly did exist. They do exist on Russia. The only time there are any sanctions on the Soviet Union was the 1970s, when the Jews had disengaged from Soviet capital. And when the Jews wanted to emigrate from Russia to Israel, they were forbidden to do so. And so the Jackson-Vanik Amendment was passed that put some limited sanctions on the Soviet Union until they allowed Jews to emigrate to Israel. That was the first and only time there were any sanctions on the Soviet Union. And that includes military equipment and stuff like that, and computer equipment and everything else. So only Putin, only nationalism. Social nationalism will ever get these kind of sanctions. But it's a war that the U.S. simply can't win. It's a war that I don't think the U.S. wants to win. What are they fighting for? What are these guys going to die for? And they're going to die in huge numbers. Now, they're on regular military maneuvers because they're on high alert. They're on high alert because the U.S. has been threatening Russia weekly for the last 10 years at least. And then his defense secretary, Mattis, is anti-Russian. And in his ignorance, kind of, locker room jock kind of way of talking, wants a war with Russia, really still having a vague distinction between the Soviet Union and Russia. Not entirely sure of how the difference there. And this comes out, this get another issue of Russia's aggression comes out in the same day that the Russian Election Commission has excluded Navalny from the presidential election. And the State Department has written this terrible denunciation. And the Russians have very calmly responded that Navalny was convicted of embezzlement in 2014 and given a 4-year suspended sentence. His brother was given a 3-year actual sentence. The U.S. at the time said this wasn't a political thing. He really did it, as if the U.S. has any right to judge on that. And, of course, the law says no felon could run for election for president. And it doesn't matter anyway, because even with American subsidies, Navalny polls maybe 4 or 5%. No one can run against Putin. There really is no opposition to Putin because he's so damn popular. Last 3-4 years, he's been running between 70 and 80%. What's the point of running against him? So these two news issues come out roughly on the same day. Putin is destroying democracy, and therefore we need to fight their aggressive designs on the rest of the world. It's very pathetic, but it's a matter of Johnson's law. No one really knows what's going on over there, so they can pretty much say whatever they want and get away with it. And I still think in the American mind, there's this vague distrust of all things Russian from the Cold War. So it's very easy to do. Russia is a very easy country to sow distrust over.
I think they really don't like the fact that Russia today produced their own news channel, which it is alternative to the other news channels. It's not as alternative as I would wish it to be. It still promotes diversity and multiculturalism. But it does provide an alternative. And I was watching that the other day, and they had Putin's live questions. And he does his live questions with all the journalists there. It goes on for 3 or 4 hours. I think the longest one went on for 5 hours, where he just sits there and answers all these questions. And he's the only world leader that we actually see that from. You won't see anyone in America sitting down taking questions from journalists and members of the public. You won't see anyone from Britain doing that. And one of the questions that were leveled to him was about his opposition. And he said, I wish I did have some credible opposition because it would keep me sharp. And that's the point of opposition. That's the point of competition. You need it so that you can improve yourself. And he was saying that the quality of his competition just isn't good enough. And the polling results bear that out. If Alexei Navalny, I'm probably getting his name wrong, but if he's only polling at 5%, then Putin is obviously speaking the truth. And if he's committed crimes, then he's a criminal. But they still back him. Why is it that they particularly back this Alexei chap, Matt? Why is it that America likes him so much, even though he's a convicted criminal?
Well, he's one of the oligarchs. If you see pictures of his brother, the picture that's circulating right now has him. He looks homosexual. He has an earring and a Red Hot Chili Peppers T-shirt. So he's pretty much an American. He believes in oligarchy, and you know, the BBC. I just read the BBC's report on the situation, and he says, and it says anti-corruption fighter. Well, he went to jail based on Putin's very, very strict anti-corruption laws. So, you know, corruption against the system in Russia is not a bad thing in the West. And, you know, in America, it's a way of life. But anything that might harm Russian society is a good, positive thing. Navalny is just one of the few who would bother to run against Putin. He would be humiliated, but the final end game is to say that, well, I got cheated out of a victory. I only got 5% of the vote because Putin is frightened of me and he stuffed ballot boxes. But Putin in Russia, Lukashenko in Belarus, they pretty much win the percentage of the vote that they get in popularity polls, which is how you know it's genuine. And Putin has no reason. Like you said before, Putin would love to be able to debate somebody worthwhile. And even if Navalny was fairly popular, the minute people found out that he was an American, that he's getting American money, he would be very unpopular very quickly. There's no way to run against Putin in Russia right now. He's just too popular.
Is he actually American then, Navalny?
Well, his brother certainly looks it. I don't believe that. Yeah, he's a lawyer. The Wall Street Journal back in 2012 said he was the man that Vladimir Putin fears the most. I don't know if he's Jewish or not. There's no evidence of that I've come across. He's from Eastern Ukraine. They have a big factory in Eastern Ukraine that they've run since 1994. He did study at Yale University. Where he received a scholarship in 2010. And he's also deep in the oil industry. He's invested in all the major firms. And, of course, he stated, like all the oligarchs, that if he ever gets power, he will sell some of these or chunks of these to the West. In other words, Russia would no longer be an independent country if that's the case. So that's kind of a long way to answer your question. He would destroy Russia's sovereignty if he was ever elected to anything.
Well, America counters by saying that Putin is involved in oil. But didn't Putin nationalize the oil? And don't the Russian people get a large slice of the benefits from, is it Rosneft that it's called, the Russian oil and gas supply?
Lukoil and all of these are partially state-owned, and they're not entirely. Because these are such strategic enterprises, the state has to be involved in them. They can't let this go because foreign investors would take over. I do want to stress, though, that oil is only about 9% of the Russian GDP. Norway has a much larger percentage of its GDP dedicated to oil than Russia does. It's a bigger part of its exports, but But in terms of general economic development, it's only relatively small percent. Putin's involvement in oil is legitimate in the sense that it has to be tightly controlled by the state for the sake of, you know, that's its claim to security here. To take over the oil wells would be to do great damage to Russia's sovereignty.
It seems similar to me what happened with Muammar Gaddafi. He nationalized the oil industry and the money went to the Libyan people and they had the Libyan sovereign wealth fund. And America just took it all. They took it all and said that was Gaddafi's private account. It clearly wasn't because he uplifted the people there no end. Everyone had their own home. Everyone was literate. They had a healthcare system. They could pay for people to go to college and university. So it's quite clear that the money was going to the Libyan people. And it's quite clear that the money is going to the Russian people. I mean, the quality of life has massively improved in the time that Putin has been in office. And obviously Putin wasn't educated at American universities. I'm not certain, but I would make a guess that he was educated at a Russian one. Is that right?
Say that again.
Putin would have been educated in Russia, not in America. Is that right?
Well, yeah, that's true. He received, later in his life, he got a scholarship to study business at Yale. And it seems that all of these guys have a very close Western contact for that reason. Almost every opposition figure went to Harvard or Yale. And it's very important to note because Harvard was deeply involved in the privatization scheme in the 1990s. In fact, their economics department was shut down by the Justice Department for the misuse of federal funds. So it's almost all of them do. And some of them who went into exile end up going into England, and they end up lecturing whether you go to Romania or Bulgaria or Serbia, these opposition leaders all have some Ivy League connection. But I want to note that, you know, the Russian hacking scandal had nothing to do with computers. It wasn't hacking in the sense that we would use the term. It was the very existence of RT. That's what the NSA said in their report of the hacking scandal was that RT shouldn't be allowed to exist because they're offering Kremlin propaganda. And they almost said it should be shut down. Not quite, but they almost said this. So this is, you know, and of course, in all the reports on Navalny today, they're not mentioning the fact that he was convicted of embezzlement. I'm sure he's committed, you know, far worse crime than that. In the past, and you can't be a felon and run for president. That's not mentioned in any of these. There are some people who are putting his popularity in the the Levada Center, which is actually a very pro-Western polling company, says that only 37% of Russians ever heard of the guy. About 14% say either they were definitely or probably support his presidential run. But the same pollster, which is a very pro-Western subsidized company, put his presidential ratings, and this was back in 2014, as between 1% and negative 1%. So it really doesn't matter what happens to him.
Yeah, we have a lot of Russians over here in Britain, Russian oligarchs and Russian Jews that left because of Putin's clampdown on corruption. And you're right. They do. They talk at the universities. They give speeches. I think there was a documentary a while back where they were trying to use these people. Soros was using these people to try and subvert what Putin was doing in Russia. And it's really flimsy, these accusations that they throw against them. I think it's hilarious that the so-called hacking of the American election was basically the existence of the Russia Today news station. And because they present an alternative view of the news, somehow that makes it fake news. That makes it illegitimate. And you, look what we have over here in Britain. We have the British Broadcasting Corporation. And that it tells this lie that it's unbiased in any way. But it's 100% biased in favor of the New World Order, in favor of quote-unquote British values, promoting homosexuality and perversity all around the world and race mixing. That's what the BBC promotes. And it promotes what the City of London wanted to promote. It promotes the banks. And I would expect Russia Today to promote Russia's viewpoint. That's hardly subversive. It doesn't say, it's not saying America today. It's saying Russia today. So it's going to tell us Russia's viewpoint on things. How is that dishonest in any way? It's basically doing exactly the same as America does and Britain does. But Russia is supposed to be somehow a vassal state and part of the same New World Order collective that America and Britain are a part of. And yet Putin doesn't want that.
That's the key to understanding this hatred, this irrational hatred, this screaming for war for no clear reason. Is if you read America's security strategy for 2017, it says the same thing about Russia and China, that they are an ideological threat, that they've been successful while using both state-run socialist and nationalist ideologies. That can't be allowed to stand, that these countries did well only when the IMF were kicked out, only when a strong state was founded to coordinate the economy and make sure that it stays within Russia rather than sold off to the highest bidder. Right in the security strategy, it says these are ideological threats. We can't have people seeing this kind of nationalism be successful. Only internationalism can be seen as successful. And if Russia were opened up, with free trade the way Americans want, it would be nothing more than a raw materials exporter. It would be a third world country within a few years, just like Bulgaria became. And that's what they want. And they're going to destroy the country rather than have this continue. Although, frankly, I don't think they'd get very far in any kind of a war.
Well, I think this is similar to the threat that we're facing here in Britain with leaving the European Union and the people that we've got negotiating the divorce settlement with the European Union. The EU are going to do all they can to mess things up, and the people that we've got in government are going to do all they can to mess things up, because the rest of the European Union cannot see a country separating from the EU and being successful in the same way that this security strategy over there in America says that the rest of the world can't see Russia and China succeeding without the IMF. We're not going to be allowed to succeed without the EU. But the difference is that people that we've got in government here in Britain don't want to see Britain succeed. They want to see Britain go down the drain. They want to say, you should have stayed in the European Union. Whereas Putin has got loyalty to his country and loyalty to the rest of us, I would suggest, because he's often stated that he wants to see a multipolar world with different spheres of influence rather than everything coming under one sphere of influence, which is the New World Order strategy.
That's another word for nationalism, talking about multipolarity. It means that nations and civilizations and races have their own specific contribution to the world. And that should be allowed to flourish. So long as the U.S. runs everything, that can't be. Liberalism is the most totalitarian of all systems because it's based on the private sector, not on the public sector. And the private sector isn't controlled by constitutional guarantees like the public sector is. So in this way, authoritarianism comes in through the back door without people realizing it. I remember it wasn't that long ago, just a few years ago, when Putin passed the strictest conceivable anti-corruption set of laws, not very popular in Russia, that the U.S. was condemning him, saying that these laws are so strict that no one could do business over there. And I think what they meant was that, you know, the U.S. can't bribe their way through to anything. And so and Navalny was convicted. I mean, the prosecution wanted 10 years, but they didn't get it. They got 3.5 years suspended. So this guy got away with murder. He had to pay, $100 million, something like that, to pay these people off. So clearly the prosecution didn't get what it wanted. It was not a political matter. And I think the CIA would love nothing more than see this guy killed. And that way they could say Putin has murdered a political opponent and we need to invade the country to avenge him. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if there's a bullet in his head in the next couple of months.
Did Putin didn't pardon him then or interfere at all to so that he didn't get the full punishment? Or am I thinking of someone else?
Well, the prosecution at the time, Putin didn't control the case. He didn't control the jury or the judge or anything else. The anti-corruption laws have a very, very fiercely independent judicial system at that level. But it didn't matter anyway, because Amnesty International said he's now a political prisoner. The fact that he didn't go to prison hasn't occurred to them. But he got off, you know, he had to pay a lot of money, but he got off much easier than I think what the government wanted.
So they say he's a political prisoner when he's actually been charged with a serious crime, corruption, not a political crime.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And you know, everyone knows he did it. You know, there's no doubt that he was involved in this. There were 100 witnesses. It was a cosmetics company that he was with, and he had to pay that money back, which he was able to do. He said that political parties are outdated. It really should be around personalities. And I think all that really means is that, you know, wealthy men with wealthy backers can run everything. I don't know even what that means. But over the last couple of years, he's all of a sudden become a nationalist. Everyone knows it's phony, but this is what he needed to imitate Putin in order to gain this handful of votes that he would receive anyway. Russia will never support a westernized candidate or a western subsidized candidate, because they'll always remember what happened to Russia in the 1990s, where she almost went out of existence. But yes, I'll repeat again, the National Security Agency, in their report, which you can get anywhere online, on the hacking scandal, simply said that it's the existence of these media companies and bloggers, pro-Putin bloggers. I don't know if they included me in that or not, but all of us, I guess, were the reason that Trump won the election and therefore need to be shut down. They didn't say shut down, but they came very, very, very close to it as Kremlin propagandists and therefore foreign agents.
Well, one of the terms that I've noticed that they've begun using is illegitimate. They will say that something isn't illegitimate source. Tucker Carlson the other day said that Red Ice were an illegitimate source. And I'm sure I've heard it about RT as well. What do they mean by illegitimate source, do you think? Unlawful?
Well, illegitimacy usually means a government that has no moral foundation, a tyranny of some kind, a group of people who, you know, take over and run a country for their own gain. It's a moral category. And I think that's how they're using it here. Because they don't follow the consensus of elite America, they have no right to function. Illegitimate in their case, I think, is, and I've heard this before too, is just one step away from criminal. You know, they're building a case to ban everything that we do. And illegitimacy, although it's a moral claim, is this you know, one of these steps to finally destroying all of our work.
So when you hear about an illegitimate child or an illegitimate marriage, it's the moral aspect of that they're using to concentrate on these news sources.
Absolutely, yeah, that's what they mean, and that it's illegitimate only because it doesn't go along with this the so-called Washington consensus on everything.
Well, we want to have a plurality of views. I mean, we have to have a plurality of views so that we can have debate and come to realize which is the correct viewpoint or which is the best viewpoint. This is why we have to have free speech in universities. I'm very pleased this week. Someone quite high up in the university system in Britain has spoken out and said that they're going to enforce free speech in universities, and they're going to start fining universities that no platform speakers. And unfortunately, the BBC then brought on a feminist to talk about this issue. And she kept saying, well, oh yes, but we can't have full free speech. There are lots of people that we can't allow to speak. But unfortunately, this, no platforming has been used against feminists. And what it really should be, though, is nationalists need to be able to speak. We need to be able to have a debate and a free exchange of ideas. And what would you say to the accusation that in Russia there isn't this free exchange of ideas and this, even though this is a criminal case against Navalny, what would you say to people that say that this was put up and this is an excuse to stop the free flow of ideas? Is there a debate over there? Is there a free flow of ideas? How does it work?
Well, you know, even with state-owned or partially state-owned newspapers, having the state own some of the stock doesn't guarantee they're going to be pro-Putin. And there's been some pretty trenchant criticisms of him, even in state-owned media firms, both on television and in print. you know, RT is defending Russia and Russian nationalism as a whole, rather than Putin personally. When it comes to the ideological span that you can legitimately choose from, Russia is far freer than the U.S. In the U.S., you can be liberal in the broad sense, libertarian, which is really the older version of liberalism, or neoconservative. That's it. And you, you have, there's a few things that you absolutely have to say. You have to be feminist. You have to believe in the Holocaust. You have to believe that the Jews are above criticism. You have to reject traditional Christianity. All of these, you know, very tightly circumscribed ideologies. That is the official view. That's how, you know, the U.S., both at the government level and the private sector level, that is the official ideology. In Russia, you can pretty much be whatever you want. I want to say, I've said it before, but no one listens. There is no law in Russia banning Holocaust denial. Holocaust denial in Russia is mainstream. It's talked about all the time. There's conferences there on a regular basis. Putin has just ordered an inquest as to whether or not the murder of the royal family was a Jewish ritual murder or not. The law, which I've read in the original, and it's a stupid law, and no one has been prosecuted under it, says that no one can deny the role of the Red Army in fighting Nazism. That's pretty much the core of it. You can't deny the patriotic nature of the Red Army. It's a stupid law. No one's been prosecuted under it. The Holocaust is mentioned only by implication. So I need to put that myth to rest. But there's people out there, no matter what Putin does, they're going to hate him, and that myth is probably going to continue.
Well, it's part of the myth of the building of the nation, the great patriotic war that the Red Army took part in, to admit that at the national level what the Red Army really did, and that the Germans were right. It's just admitting that the people that they've been told were invading them were in the right. So I don't think they're ever going to do that. And I can see America funding people to suggest that as well. Even though they don't like it in the West, I can see America funding people in Russia to subvert Russia, to point out those claims. So I would suggest that maybe the wording of that law may have had something to do with that. Anyway, Matt, we've reached the end of the podcast here. So I say thank you very much for coming on. I think that's been really interesting. I've learned a lot here. I'm sure the listeners have as well. I'm not sure who's going to be here on Friday, Matthew Heimbach and another co-host. So until then, have a good day and hail victory.